everyone. Welcome back to the Wide World of Wargaming. This is the Warhammer 40,000 segment. I am your host, Vince Morgado. Joining me, as usual, Mr. Michael Schwartz.
Hello!
And Mr. Alexander Gonzalez.
Hey, what's up?
Joining us for the very first time, friend of the show and special guest, Tony Myers of Hammerhead Games. Sir, welcome to the program.
Oh, thank you, guys. How you guys doing?
We are fantastic, and we are very glad that you have elected to join us. We wanted to talk to you a little bit about your great showing with Yanari, fresh off the new White Dwarf rules. Kind of talk to you about that and what it's like to run a business in the hobby, and then we'll get your opinion on the Bug Eater GT. Tony, you went 4-2 at the BAO. Why don't you walk us through your Yanari list, what the concept was, how you feel it's changed?
Okay, so despite my best efforts, I managed to do a 4-2. I definitely am out of practice. I'm definitely like, which is, you know, wonderful problems to have. Being able to run the business and do everything that I'm doing is great. It definitely takes away from the amount of time that I can devote to playing 40K, but it was really great. I always like, I have to go to BAO. It's kind of like the backyard event for me. You know, it's definitely something that I look forward to every year. So, I definitely like take the time and set that aside to go. I played a half a game of practice the night before BAO against the person who beat me in round 4. And that was the only practice for 2 months leading up to the event, or any 40K whatsoever. So to say I was rusty was a little bit of an understatement, but that being said, Yanari's great. I think it's cool. It's not going to to be dominant. I hope it's the last time it has to be FAQ'd or talked about or complained about on the internet.
Whoa. Are you implying that people would complain about a faction that's not actually broken in the 40K community?
Yeah, it's almost as if it was just beating up everybody in the mid tables, and then the whole internet cried out in one giant thing like Alderaan and decided to just continually bitch about my faction to the point where every FAQ touched it. So I haven't played the same list since 8th edition started.
So are you Obi-Wan in this scenario?
I don't know. I'm actually salty enough to not... I'm just kind of happy that it's over. I'm happy I could walk up to a table and they're like, oh, you play Yanari? Idiot.
You fucking loser!
Yeah.
I can sympathize with that from a few years ago.
Yeah, I'll definitely take that over, oh, you play Yanari. They were so mad that, you walk up to the table and nothing's even happened yet. It's the worst way to introduce yourself. You're like, here's my list, and we know, we've looked at it before, talked about it with my friends, and we hate you. So
you should feel bad, your list is bad, and no, your parents don't love you.
I'm sorry, it's just the crutch I had to roll on. No, I actually, I'm a big kind of Yanari fanboy to begin with, so I'm kind of happy that they got nerfed to the point where no one can complain about it anymore because they just want to play them and make them work. And I've kind of took it upon myself to try to make Yanari work and prove the internet wrong a little bit. So I guess that's kind of where I'm at, trying to be the weird poster boy for Yanari. So I was really happy with the results at BAO overall. I did have a game that I felt like I let get away from me based on my lack of practice and things like that. So I feel like I could have done a 5-1 performance, but that's neither here nor there because I didn't. So, it was still good. I think Yanari's changed. Everything you know about Yanari's gone. It's not anything like before. It's close combat, which is weird for space elves. I really like it. So I think it has a much better feel. I think it definitely has some more fun elements to it. And it's by far not broken whatsoever. So it's definitely a little bit more of a challenge, which is fun too. So as some people on Comp 40K pointed out, I'm playing Dracari with Yanari Frosting. So I guess I can't take full. It's not like I just rolled in with pure Yanari and I'm going to try to win best in faction with it. But I think anytime you include a 337 point swirly demon, it's definitely a focal point of the list. And it's one of those things where you're planning around it. So in a way, in my opinion, it is still a Yanari list, but I guess we disagree there.
Well, we talked about this a little bit when we saw the White Dwarf, and I think specifically I mentioned, pointed out how good it would be, how good the combo with Incubi would be. Did you bring it, was that part of your list concept? Did you start at Dark Eldar and then wrap the Yunari frosting around it, or did you take Yunari and just try to pick the units that you could best utilize their abilities?
Yeah. So, I mean, the thing is, the Jakari Codex is so good. Like, it really is. Like, it's one of those things where you almost start without it, and then, like, slowly as you keep remaking lists, you get more and more of it back in your list, and you're like almost despite your best efforts. Like, I really want to play a pure Yunari list in a perfect world, but, like, I don't think that running pure Yunari is ever going to be as it's not going to be as good on, at least on paper, as having like a soup version, unfortunately. And that's kind of the case in general at 8th edition. Like, if you are going to be the snowflake that runs a pure list, like, in most cases, there is a better, more optimal version that has some, at least some elements of soup. And so that's kind of where we're at. But yeah, I definitely built like with Yunari in mind. And then it just happened to be that I was able to get some more playability because, like, Coven units do really, really well in combat, and Talos are amazing.
Talos are insanely good and damn near impossible to kill.
Right. I don't want to tell any more people about it because I feel like it's just the next thing to get. It'll be the new Yunari for me.
I'm not ready to get it. Yep.
Well, they haven't nerfed. Drukhari's actually, we've covered it a little bit on the show. Drukhari's been running. One guy in particular has been running apeshit with Yunari over in Europe, who we affectionately call Cousin Boris. And, you know, we haven't heard anything from as far as them getting nerfed. So I think you're probably safe on that count.
Yeah. I think so. I ran six at BAO.
Jesus.
I actually just picked up the other three I was missing this weekend with some winnings at Bug Eater. So. Yeah, I'm going to double down and go nine at some point here.
And that's amazing. Each data sheet allows you to run up to three.
Yeah. It's like a squad. Yes.
It's three. A squad. Yeah. Good old fashioned monster mash.
Yeah.
I have the data sheet here for our audience. If I can go over it or no. So Talos up to three in a squad, 75 points base, movement 8, good old 3 weapon skill, BS4. Not that you really need it. Strength 6, toughness 6, 7 wounds, 5 attacks a pop. And 3 up save. Also, mind you, they get power from pain, and they have a 5 up invul save. That's super sweet. A little package for 75 points. And then you come with a ton of different weapon outlays. You have haywire blasters, heat lances. What's the weapons that you're packing on your boys there, so, Tony?
So it's a little bit of a trick question. So at BAO and leading up to that, it's always kind of been the quote-unquote internet build, or the one that I went with was... you do 1 chain flail and you do 1 micro scalpel so that you have the ability to do some horde control with the chain flails. You get up to 10 attacks right. That way.
Oh my God.
Or you do the micro scalpel, which is plus, you know, you get a heavier hitting strength and minus 2 damage weapon. So it's basically with the 1 chain flail and the 1 micro scalpel, you either get 10 attacks rerolling wounds at base strength with no AP. Or you're getting, with the micro scalpel, you're getting the additional strength minus 2 damage, I believe.
Yes.
At 5 attacks.
Yeah.
And so, like, with Urien nearby, giving him a plus 1 strength, you're hitting on strength 8 with those. So strength 8, 5 attacks, super strong.
Also.
And punch a knight pretty well.
And Tony's little close combat package is only a 7 points on top of the 75-point frame. So that's a nice little combo for 82 points a model. So that is
basically the two builds that you'll see are going to be either the one I just described where it comes with the micro scalpel and the chain flails and then the twin haywire, up to 98 points a model, or you're going to see the same build except for they'll do double micro scalpel because you get an extra attack if you have 2 micro scalpels. Honestly, like 6 attacks is almost 10 in this weird vacuum. And it hits so hard that like it's kind of worth it. So like in my new builds, I'm actually going towards that, and that build comes to 99 points. So either way, sub 100 points for this crazy monster thing.
Right, and the Haywire Blaster is also really good. Assault D3, Strength 4, minus 1 AP, and when you target a vehicle, wounds done on a 4 automatically. That does a mortal wound every single time. And on a 6 up, it's D3 mortal. So that's a lot of damage toward any tank, including a freaking knight.
Yeah, and each Talos gets a twin Haywire Blaster if you want on that scenario. So basically, each Talos is 2 D3 Haywire shots. It was bananas when you had Doom on something and then that was going off because then you're re-rolling into more mortal wounds. But
things that nobody except you misses is a perfect example of what you just said.
No, it's you know what? I'm okay with it going away. Honestly, like it's still really good. It's an interesting like I'm weirdly okay with how it all changed. I complain a lot as far as like how many times. I think I'm more frustrated with the frequency in the changes as opposed to the overall changes.
Mm-hmm.
Just because it's like you're always remaking your list, you know, like you never play the same thing. You don't get the practice in that other factions are getting by not. They have like their one big FAQ. They groan for like a week and then they get back into business of building a list. And like
only a week? Which faction is this and who are these reasonable people?
I don't know. I just feel like everyone got it way easier than the 17 nerfs I've experienced. I come off as salty, but ultimately I'm okay with the end of the end game results. It's just that like I'm not. Yeah, it's just a weird scenario. Yeah, so it's all good.
Show us a non-salty 40K player, and I'll show you somebody with a drinking problem.
Yeah.
I mean, it sounds like a perfect marketing opportunity for Hammerhead Games. You can provide them with a Hammerhead salt container as you begin the next round.
Ooh. All right.
Oh, wow. That joke laid flat.
Well, there goes Schwartz into his product design background that nobody knew he had.
Well, that leads us to another discussion here. Now, Tony, you do have Hammerhead Games. It's a successful company. And, you know, we've all used your products at one point or another. And, you know, your measurement markers, they're great. You know, you got the objective markers. You got the display cases. What made you want to start Hammerhead Games in the first place?
So, essentially, I was just any other gamer trying to do my thing. I was starting to get into competitive play a little bit more. I was, you know, you're trying to find any tools or things you can do to play faster, to be more efficient, to help your game so you're not worried about the small things and you can worry about playing at a higher level. So on the internet, I found a quick measure device. They were relatively new at the time. This is years ago. And so I had the only place I could find it from was some company in the UK. I paid like, I want some stupid amount of money. Like it was like $22 for a 6-inch quick measure, which like to put in perspective, we sell those for $6 right now. So it's definitely a huge change in what they go for comparatively. But I ordered it from the UK, waited like 3 weeks before it showed up, and then it showed up broken. And it was just like, all right, I could do better. Like I don't even know how to do laser cutting. I don't have any information on how to do this, but I know that I can like at least get something cheaper and not broken to the public. So basically what I ended up doing is I went to a local company that did laser cutting and I was like, hey, if I buy 100 of these, what does it look like? What can we do? And then basically they gave me a price. We figured it out. It ended up being like not worth doing in a way that I can actually bring it to market. So long story short, I ended up getting my own laser machine, and the rest is kind of history from there. And I released like two or three designs and kind of thought it was just going to be like an extra thing that me and my friends would do. Or maybe I would do like make a couple of dollars amongst like if my friends wanted to buy some templates. And here we are about 4.5 years later, and I've been full time with it for about 2 years. So it's been quite the ride.
Very nice. Very nice.
So you travel to probably more than just 40K events, as I know you sell, I believe you sell for Infinity and some of the other kind of more minor games too.
Yeah, one of the things that we made sure we did early on, and it's just kind of like an idea that we have, is that we want to try to support gaming in general anyway.
Sure,
like
of course.
You know, it's not just all about what I play, because there are so many cool games out there. You just can't physically play all of them. It's just not possible. So a lot of the stuff that we make are things that I've either learned over time, you know, just being a gamer and learning other games, or they've been like custom orders or specials that we've worked with people that are the experts in those games in order to make some cool products for the ones that I don't have the opportunity to play. We want to make as many games as possible and we want to do everything, but I kind of refuse to do anything that's not worth. You know, I don't want to just kind of half make something or guess at what they need. So a lot of what you see is either the byproduct of working closely with people that are really good at those games or know more about it than I do. And that's why, A, we have so many games, but B, we have so many that more that we want to do and we just haven't yet because we're not going to do it the wrong way. So that's kind of where that leads into. But yeah, we do a lot of, like, we travel around the country. We work very closely with Warlord Games, who does Bolt Action. In fact, we do a thing called the WGTC, which is, for lack of a better way of describing it, is kind of like the Bolt Action equivalent of ITC.
Sure.
So we essentially do the international rankings for them and for the competitive format for Bolt Action. So last, I believe, we travel, if I'm not mistaken, I think it's 16 events a year around the country. Either conventions related with just Hammerhead in general or, like, especially with Bolt Action events. And we're sponsored directly by Warlord Games North America, and we do that too. So it keeps us busy. It's definitely a fun thing that we get to do. That's one of the other the other games that we carry stuff for. But we're doing Age of Sigmar, Bolt Action, Infinity, 40K, 30K, Blood Bowl. We're Friends of Gaslands. That's another cool, like, side game. I know I'm forgetting some. My brain's a little melted after the long drive. But
I have the full list in front if I can do the pitch, if I can do the whole countdown.
Please. We're accepting applications, Mike, so if you want to keep working with me. Like,
we got Star Wars Destiny.
Here we go.
We got Blood.
He needs that side income. Being a banker is not getting it done anymore.
Right.
Even in the Bay Area, being a banker is not getting it done.
The real estate prices are through the roof. You got to do what you got to do.
I mean, like, you got X-Wing here. You got Legend of the Five Rings. Is that a Infinity?
That is a Chinese history war game, if I remember correctly.
They do a lot of, like, card games, but it's a card game.
Also got Wings of Glory here, which is that like a World War II combat game?
Yeah, World War II aerial combat. So you're looking at, like, some like planes flying around and shooting each other. Very similar to I'm trying to think of it. Well, it's not quite. It's like single plane X-wing is a good way to put it, but World War II plane. So it's pretty cool.
Okay, cool.
I was talking to somebody that, you know, we're all affiliated with and that you're helping organize the Gentleman's GT in Las Vegas. Is it true that they're working on a Aeronautica Imperialis re-release? Are you going to be doing any support for that in the future, you think?
How I alluded to earlier, I'm always down to work with any new game and stuff like that. I am excited on a personal level for that to come back, just as, like, an old school gamer, like, wanting to see all the GW side games come through. But, you know, if I get the opportunity to play it and can develop what I think works, you know, well to help people, then I'll come up with my own stuff. Otherwise, you know, someone's like the avid Aeronautica guy, that hit us up and we can work together and make some cool products. So yeah, like, we're always open for anything. Like, if you play some obscure game and you want something made for it, like, we're down to make it, but I'm just not gonna guess on my own, like, what you need. You know, I'd rather have the person that knows what they need tell me. So that's kind of where we're at with that.
All right, so we're gonna circle back around to the Bug Eater GT. Just as you mentioned, you are just coming back from that event as we record this, brain fried from almost a full day straight of driving, you said.
I believe it's like 22, 23 hours, if you include, like, the couple power, you know, gas station stops or whatever.
Yeah, where you load up on that really bad battery acid caffeine supreme coffee.
Yeah, and I was doing that fun little trick where you do a monster on the first stop, you do a coffee on the next stop, you do a Coca-Cola on the third stop, and then you circle back again.
Oh, and then you do a shot of cocaine somewhere in the middle.
I can neither confirm nor deny.
It's okay. It's a rideshare thing.
Yeah, I drove. So we left the. So we'd not. Okay, we played the Bug Eater. We, like, round. So they do this thing. They do four rounds on Saturday. They do two rounds on Sunday so that people can leave and get back to, you know, because a lot of the people come from out of state.
Sure.
We go the furthest, but, like, yeah, they know we're trying to get back on the road. So They do the first round at like 9:45. We were on the road and like out the door by like 5 o'clock, 6 o'clock after we stopped at the local store, you know, with some prizes or whatever. And then like we're on the road by 6. And so I did like a 12-hour stretch. And then my buddy drove for 3 hours to like let me remember what my name was and kind of be a human for a second. And then like I finished off the drive and drove the rest. So yeah, it was like 18 hours of driving for me. It was brutal, but we made it.
It is those drives are absolute just soul destroyers. I haven't done that in a long time, but my all-time record was 26 hours behind the wheel. Wow. Let's go ahead and take a let's look at your list here. As you said, you did not skimp on the Drukhari detachment. I'm looking at an Archon, 15 Witches, the Tantalus, always that kind of big Jabba sail barge vehicle. Yeah. And then one thing you mentioned to me specifically pre-show, the Hellions. For those who don't know, it's kind of the Green Goblin meets Green Goblin meets the Incubi.
Anyone who played 6th edition 40K should definitely know who Hellions are.
You should remember what the Hellions are.
Yeah, and I'm hoping to remind people what they are in 8th. I think they're good.
So. Well, why don't you go ahead and run us through this, you know, unit by unit. What are some of the combos that, you know, really you feel like did the most work?
Sure. So one of the things I did is, like, I'm kind of still in that experimental page because it's not – there's very – like – so at BAO, we had 150 people. There were 2 people playing Inari, including myself.
Yep.
The other person was one of my buddies that came with me. So it wasn't like – there's not a lot of people playing Inari right now. There's not a lot of things you can, like, ask people about or get good insight as to what's happening. So I'm at this point where I'm, like, going to majors and somehow it's my playtesting, which is crazy.
Not normally your favorite laboratory. Is the event itself.
Like, hey, I just like drove across the country to go play 6 rounds of experimentation 40K that probably should have happened at home or something. So, so like I made some changes to my list to try to incorporate more Inari and to try some units that I wanted to do. Notably, I wanted to bring Jabba's sail ship, like the Tantalus.
Yep.
I think it's pretty awesome in Inari. There's some tricks to it. So, like, one of the big tricks on the, like, speaking of the Tantalus, because it's kind of the elephant in the room being 400 points.
Yeah, that's not cheap.
Yeah, I think it's definitely overcosted for what it does. That being said, it was MVP in at least one of the games. In every game, it made its impact. And I think, like, maybe one game it didn't, like, do enough to make up for its points.
Mm-hmm.
So, like, overall, it's a pretty good success to have it. But it's definitely something like you better use it right. You better not let it go to waste. And there's a really good chance, like, you know, if you do the wrong thing, like the Castellan or some other silly thing is just going to delete it.
Just nuke the thing off the face of the earth.
Right. And there's plenty of shooting out there. People have ways to do stuff. So
yeah, Schwartz.
Don't be bitter.
It has 8 wounds. It's got a 3-up armor save, 5-up invuln. And it's T7, so that it's like moderately durable. Like, it definitely isn't just like a complete paper airplane, but it definitely can fold too. So the trick with it is it has the ability to transport the Hellions. So that's pretty surprising to most people. You just have like 14, 15, or even it has a 16 capacity, so you can theoretically have up to 16 little Green Goblin hoverboard dudes hopping out of it.
Mm-hmm.
So that's kind of funny. A couple of my matches that actually, that's something I ended up doing. But I usually put all the witches and Archon inside of it.
I was going to ask if it was generally the thing you would fly at the board and then have your witches basically just jump out of, like, surprise, motherfucker.
Right. Yeah. Like, witches don't like to be shot. So basically, if they can hide in the big dumb boat and then, like, hop out and go charge, that's definitely, like, way better. Yeah, and then, like, the number of drops, like, being able to take 3 units of 5 witches and put them in there, like, now all of a sudden, and then Archon, like, I'm dropping 4 drops overall.
Definitely.
So, depending on the mission, like, some missions don't matter, like, you deploy your whole army, but in the ones that you still do, the I guess I'll say it, like, the correct way to do it, is playing 40K, back and forth, that it helps with the drops, so.
Because you're running a lot of chaff here.
Yeah, like, I definitely have, like, Eldar in general, like, they are very much, like, you know, they can punch really hard, but they also do not like to get punched back, so they can fall pretty hard. I'm running to, you know, a lot of troops. I think I missed having the big blob of witches that I ran at BAO. But it was nice to be able to get a battalion out of the three units of five. So it's a give and take. Command points are a thing. So that was good. The one thing I didn't like about having all the units of witches is I felt like you get a lackluster amount of success with the combat drugs, because with one unit you can like pick and give it the best one. When you start having three or four of them, now all of a sudden you're getting diminishing returns on each one of those,
and
because you can't hit unless you just get lucky with the roll or something. So that was like kind of a small like thing, like critique that I came back with after the event. But yeah, like Hellions, I ran them both at BAO and at Bug Eater, and they were phenomenal at BAO, but they also all but one game made every charge from Deep Strike. So like, I think the results were a little skewed, you know, cause they just came in and did their thing. And then like at Bug Eater, they definitely like missed a few charges and just sat there and were like, oh yeah, we die. They returned to the median a little bit on that. That being said, they're still very good. They're definitely something your opponent has to deal with. And if they're like, despite the fact that they are like a 5-up save with no envil and single wound models of T3, like, so they do die really fast. It is still wounds that your opponent has to do. And like, they hit hard enough that like, they're going to sit, even if they miss a charge and sit there, they are devoting resources to it. So in this strange way, that helps the rest of your army get to where it got to go.
Yeah, that's great. You know, it's so funny. You know, they like, just like you said, they might look, you know, they might fall over through a stiff wind or you look at them the wrong way. But I mean, they, again, if you passed every single one of your charges when they came out in one event, then they must have been clutch as fuck.
Like, a good example of this is like in the first round of BAO when I'm like, you know, the most rusty, like, okay, I just hope I can remember to play 40K again. Like, I played against a guy that was with AdMech, and like, they dropped in, they made, they sniped a character with all the poison shots because I was able to land closest to him, and then they made a, you know, 9 or 10 inch charge against 4 chicken walkers with the pokey sticks. I don't know what they're called.
The you're talking the AdMech walkers.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, help me out here, guys! Somebody save me. No.
Rustalker?
They're Rustalkers.
Oh.
Dragoons.
The Dragoons.
Yeah, I was so close to Rustalker. No. Yeah, Dragoons are definitely, yeah, that's who they are, Dragoons. So, yeah, and then they charged into a 4-man unit of Dragoons, killed, like, 3 and almost the 4th one with charging, and then, like, proceeded to locked him in combat so he couldn't be shot. Then my turn, on his phase of assault, killed him, and then like on my turn went over and played freeze tag with 2 Dune Crawlers, all before Call came up and reminded them that they're not invincible.
Is that when the tentacles of the what are they called, the mechadendrites, just came over and started literally ripping things into tiny little pieces?
Yeah, they like basically like Spider-Man had his revenge and the Green Goblin totally died. Not having it. So but I mean, at that point they killed 4 Dragoons and played freeze tag with Dune Crawlers for a turn, so like they definitely did work
right. Just keeping the Dune Crawlers probably off your Tantalus and off the Talos was, you know, the biggest benefit you got out of them.
Yeah, like I didn't have the Tantalus back up in BAO, so but like not shooting the Talos so that they can continue removing big dumb robots with Haywire, that was
nice. Great. I was gonna ask, yeah, Tony, with regards to the Yin Karn, how's the experience running that at Bug Eater with the changes?
The Yin Karn is amazing. It is my favorite model. It's definitely something that you have to play correctly. Mm-hmm. If you make even one mistake, it will totally evaporate because, you know, your opponent just obviously has to deal with
right.
it. It's got the character protection, so like that's a majority of its defense, even though it does have a 3-up, 4-up, 5-up, 6-up in Field of Pain. So like it is durable. But you know, the character protection is obviously the thing that keeps it the most alive, so they don't just nuke it every game.
Right.
Is that where the Hellions come in handy also?
Yeah, like, because now all of a sudden they're definitely the closest thing, you know, if they're all up in your grill, like, if they're the closest thing, so that helps there. So now it's like, okay, sure, you have to waste shots on them, but that means that the Yinkarn is that much more alive, you know, right now. And then when they do waste all their shooting on stuff like that, you know, when it finally gets down to where they don't have enough shooting left for the Yinkarn to care, then she teleports over to where something died on their turn, and then either heroically intervenes to charge into something, or lets you charge her, and like, that's a mistake. So yeah, she's the Swirly Death God, definitely loves to be in combat. So yeah, she's great. If you mess up, she will die, and then you'll regret it, and it's a big liability. A 337 point model, you can't play lightly. But like, yeah, she's MVP in every list, or in every game. I'll continue to put her in the list no matter what, going forward. I just don't see there's any way not to play her as an Eldar player. Even if you're just splashing it and you don't want to do the whole Yunari thing, just finding a way to get that model in the board, assuming you can play it correctly, is just so good.
Okay. Is it just for the ability, you know, the upside, like the odds, if she ever does get close, it's basically over for everything she charges?
Yeah, so like, she, like, put in perspective, like, in my last round of at the Bug Eater, I played against a Castellan Crusader and another, like, Knight Paladin, as well as five assassins, and that was the list. And she single-handedly, like, killed, I mean, she didn't, like, I mean, there was wounds being done by my shooting, but she took down at least two knights in combat. So, yeah, she does work. And then, so... she's a psyker, so she can cast smite. She has a targetable smite that she can take, which I pretty much always do.
Sure.
And then there's also like this aura smite. So if you want, you can triple down on the smite abilities. Or you can do like buffs. Like, she's a centerpiece model for the rest of Yunari. So depending on your build, you can do things to really like help the rest of the list. She has an ability to, or one of the psychic abilities you could do is like pick an enemy unit, and then all of your Inari models reroll wounds in combat versus it. So you can basically pile into one unit and just cast a psychic power. And now all of a sudden, like, your whole army is based, or your whole Inari part is rerolling wounds in combat, and they already want to be there because they're Inari now. So,
So just for example, that would be if we were to just use the Hellions, for example, that would be what? Three attacks each at strength, four, one rent.
Yeah, so like, that's the thing, is they Hellions and Yunari and stuff, they like, they still benefit from Power from Pain, so they can get an additional, like, on turn three they're getting plus one to attack, or plus one to hit in combat,
so they're hitting on twos.
Yep, hitting on twos. Yunari, if they killed something and charge, they get another plus one, so if your opponent has like negatives to hit, it's still on twos. And then on top of that, they get combat drugs, so you can give the Hellions an additional attack, or you can give them additional strength depending on what's more needed for the matchup.
Yeah.
So either strength five with that many attacks, or you go up to four attacks. Wait, no. Yeah.
They're two each at base, I'm almost positive.
Yeah, I believe it's two base, three with the, for the character, yeah. The Exarch guy. And then, yeah, you give them an extra attack with a combat drug in most matchups. So now they're just like, here's a million attacks. And the thing is with them is like, they don't have any AP, but they're two damage weapons. So any of them that go through really hit like a ton of bricks.
Yeah.
And we talk about this all the time, just in terms of even in the worst opportunity for your utility, you could throw them at a knight and just pray for sixes since they're doing two damage each.
Yeah, and then if you have the ability to like reroll wounds versus them, like, I mean, I believe the math like came to like 48 or something silly, like, so it's basically three apiece, so 30, 42 plus four, yeah, 46 attacks, hitting on twos, so pretty much all of them. The Yinkarn even has an ability you can make them reroll ones.
Yep.
So if you took that ability, you can like do that as well. I usually don't, just because reasons or whatever. There's other things I want to do. But yeah, I mean, hitting on twos with that, I mean, you're gonna get like 36 to 40 of those through, and then for hitting, and then from there you're just, like I said, you're rerolling sixes. So it's like, yeah, go ahead and make 15, 20 saves. Yep. You know, every one you miss is two damage. You know, so You do that to support the Yin Karn swinging through. She's hitting on twos. She's wounding on fives, but gets rerolled a wound naturally because of her cool sword. But every attack she has is minus four d6 damage.
Yes.
So that's hits.
Essentially, even now is still just a walking melta gun.
Yeah.
She hits really hard. I mean, that being said, like, you know, invuln saves are a thing, and there's times when, like, sure, you made 8 5 ups. Congratulations. Like, you know, like, damn it. Like, but, you know, like, that's just the way it goes. Things are swinging sometimes. So there's times that she quote unquote whiffs, but anything that doesn't have an emblem save, she just deletes. So, yeah, she's really good. She's got the fly keyword so she can charge the plane. So that's a thing.
Go ahead, Schwartz.
I was going to say, with the Hellions, do you find yourself using their hit and run ability a lot, or is that something that's just very useful for moving across the board in terms of picking up objectives, charging weak units?
So, yeah, they're really good at being the bully unit. I do like the part of the reason I like them a lot is they have an 18-inch range with their poison guns.
Yeah.
So they can deep strike in, they can poison something a little further back and not have to shoot the thing closest to them, so they could theoretically make them miss their charge. So that's a strong ability, like shoot a second, you know, chaff unit while they're then charging the first one.
Yeah.
So that's the thing. The problem is that, like, they usually come in and devastate something, and if they don't kill it, then it kind of beats them up back. So,
right.
You know, basically, you don't really get a whole lot of opportunities for those things. You can run them, like, in certain matchups, you're going to want to have them be the little bully unit that flies around the board, kidding those backfield objective holders or people, you know, if they're running engineers or things like that. They're really good at that because of their speed.
Right.
But at that point, you also have a 200-point unit that doesn't like being shot, floating around the whole board. So I ended up using them a lot just to, like, kind of just crash into the front lines. Their best game yet ever, like, and I know I described that AdMech matchup, but, like, the best thing they ever did was against a demon player with, like, all those plague bearers and all of the, you know, smites and crazy, those terminators that move 4 inches, but, like, the Nurgle ones. There's a list with that, and, like, they just crashed into the front of that and, like, just decimated a unit of plague bearers, like, all by themselves. So they, you know, there's two units screening. They shot in with the poison, got some kills, charged in, did an 11-inch charge on turn one, like, to come in and crash in, and then, like, proceeded to, like, absorb a lot of his normal smites because they're the closest thing. Which gave me time for all the talus to come in and then just mop up. So
super nice. Yeah, super nice.
Yeah, there's definitely, like, some moments where you're just like, you know what? Like, they are still bodies. They're still wounds you have to chew through, even though they are paper thin.
Right.
You just crash them into them and say, deal with it.
Awesome. 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 So, that's really cool.
Yeah. I think that they have a place. I don't think they're going to dominate the meta. It's not going to be three max units of Hellions in every list. It's not going to be anything crazy like that. They're in no danger whatsoever of any kind of nerfs anytime soon. So, but at the same time, they have a place. They definitely can make a move and they can do some cool stuff. So I'm excited to see them on the table. They're one of my favorite models. And anytime you can have a bunch of little hoverboard green goblin guys running around making your opponent sweat, like, that's definitely a win.
Yeah. Plus with the power from pain, the fact that they can reroll charges starting the second battle round.
Right.
And then plus one to hit in close combat, the third round, they're just really stacked up.
Power from Pain is one of the best abilities in the game, in my opinion. Like, it's so good. Like, it has so many different abilities. Like, at late game, they all of a sudden, like, don't care about morale. Turn one, they're getting 6-up feel no pain. So, like, that already instantly makes them more durable than the 5-up say they normally have. If you make a bunch of 6-ups, like, power from pain, like, you know, feel no pain is a thing. So,
yeah, I know. It's super good. It's a really good combo, especially for Yanari, where they want to be in close combat, where they want to be in your face. It combines very well.
Yeah, that's kind of like the big takeaway is, like, so before Yanari was all about, like, besides the, you know, the loophole of certain stratagems with Craftworld names working and all the shenanigans that it was, now they very much, like, said essentially Yanari is your Craftworld trait or your obsession. Mm-hmm. and you still get all the really cool things of the parent codex. So keeping power from pain, keeping combat drugs, though, and like, I guess, you know, like battle focus or like, for example, with Harlequins, like that's the next kind of thing I want to try with Yanari is like running some Harlequins and being able to keep Rising Crescendo and those things, like that's so good. Like those are amazing.
Yeah. Yeah. You know, I'm glad you were able to go to this event and, you know, I'm glad that a lot of your units were able to do well. You know, we were kind of doomsaying or not necessarily doomsaying, but I was just kind of laughing for a while. I was laughing for a while that Yanari had the changes they had, but like you said, Power from Pain is still good, at least in a vacuum for Yanari specifically. Now, you know, we do want to take a look at the event placeholders for Bug Eater.
Mr. Jeremiah Pettit, or Petit, depending on how he pronounces it, coming in first place with a full-on, no-holds-barred Adeptus Custodes list. This is not a Jeff Robinson Custodes list with Guard and Admech thrown in. No, no, my friends. This is two Shield Captains, two Vexilla Praetors. I think I'm counting three-by-three Custodian Guard, three Palace Grav tanks and three Caladius Grav tanks. I like this is one of those lists that appeals to Alex because not only is it one page, it's like two thirds of a page.
Yeah, no, it's perfect. You can fuck around and put whatever else you want on that piece of paper, man.
You could put, you know, you could have like little inspirational quotes at the bottom. You could have some
like live, laugh, love or something like that, you know?
Yeah, you know, like some kind of Hallmark greeting card on the bottom. This is,
and also the palace grab
support for kind of what we saw Jeff mention on some of his appearances and on stream. The Caladius is just a beast.
Yeah, that is amazing. I didn't play against the person that won the event, but I did play against another Custode player that was running three of those silly tanks. And hot damn, they are good.
Is it a safe consensus that maybe Forge World made a boo-boo again?
No. No, I think they're perfectly priced where they're at. You know, they're not
perfectly. Would you say, Alex, they're perfectly balanced as all things should be?
Oh yeah. Well, I mean, I wouldn't say that they're necessarily perfectly balanced, but the Twin Lastrum Bolt Cannon is good. The Accelerator Cannon is fantastic. You are looking at 630 points for three of these tanks, and remember, they are the easiest thing to kill in a Custode's army. They don't have a two-up save. They can't get cover easily because they're the size of a Land Raider. And the best armor save they start off with is a three-up, not a two-up. The best invul save they get is a five-up, not a four-up. And they don't have any sort of ability to have a feel no pain mechanic.
Alex, they are coming with
minus sure,
point.
They're fast and they have Power of the Machine Spirit, so they can move and shoot pretty well. But you start focusing them down, they'll die like any other vehicle with a five-up invul.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think there's one thing that you're missing, too, is that they have a minus two to be charge bubble.
Yep, they have great charge defense.
Yeah, so, like, basically, like, backfield tanks, you're going to want to deep strike in and come charging in, but, like, now all of a sudden that's a losing proposition with an 11-inch charge. Like, that's just not going to happen. So, like, in a way, they don't worry about the whole – I mean, obviously, like, Gene Silvercoil can get closer, or, like, other weird units can do stuff like that, but they don't – they have the flight keyword, so you can't even freeze tag them.
Yeah. Right. Tony, let's be real, though. You're not going to try to freeze tag them. I think if you're trying to charge a unit that's already minus two to charge and has fly, it's already a bad move stacked on top of another bad move. You're not going to want to charge this unit since it has fly anyways, just as you mentioned. So that's not relevant. You're shooting, you know, if you're the Chaos guy who spams Havocs, you're shooting 10 Las Cannons at one of these tanks. You know, if you're a Necron army, you're shooting a unit of Destroyers or maybe one of the Seraptech Heavy Constructs guns at one tank.
He's running two of those.
Try to just completely nuke the tank. You're not trying to charge this thing.
Yeah. Remember, I think he is running the minus one to hit at range flag, though.
Right. I think
he's running two of them.
What's happening is, so like, yes, they are the quote unquote worst version of a Custode that you're going to see in the list. And I don't mean to be argumentative. I just mean that, like, in the sense of, like, they are amazing at shooting, and, like, the best way to shoot them is to try to outshoot them, which means that you're at a disadvantage inherently. So they've essentially, like you said, you're not really looking to charge it because that's a problem. So it limits you to trying to outshoot the thing that's really good at shooting. So I just think they're inherently really good. I don't think they're overly broken, like to the point where they need like some huge nerf. I think if they just get a small point increase,
that's what I've been leaning towards.
A little bit more points on each one to kind of make them second guess it. But you're still going to see them. And then honestly, it's for they're either going to make it 2,000 points in a model and like get removed from the game, or they're just going to not do anything about it. And aggregate's not a problem. So,
well, realistically, what we would want to do is we would want to just make the accelerator cannon more expensive so that it gives the other option the light of day. But, I mean, you know, just as you mentioned, by no means am I saying that this unit is bad. What I do mean to say is, in order for you to start trying to, take these units off the table, because they do still have that 5-up invul, you're essentially wanting to focus on one at a time, which also becomes a huge issue with everything else that they have between the small grav tanks, which are just as resilient but just less wounds, right. And then, custodian the guards.
Two shield captains.
Yeah.
Which are there to really buff up the shooting, because they're giving the reroll once they hit. So all the tanks are shooting on twos, rerolling ones until they're at half wounds. So that's really efficient. You're hitting on like 96%.
Yeah, and I think Jeff was running with his with like Trehan, so like as a counter charge element, and also like rerolls and things like that. So now it's like, cool, you got close to it. Trehan's going to punch you in the face, like those kind of things. So, whether or not it's like a Don Eagle jet bite captain, or if it's like, whatever their counter charge is, like you still don't like, basically, you're going to try to interact with these guys, they're going to make you pay for it.
They have some kind of, inherent list advantage that makes them better at whatever you're doing than whatever you're using to kill them. Second place coming up to a Mr. Dan Sammons running Imperial Soup between a Vanguard Assassins Detachment, a House Tyrannus Knights Detachment of Count 'em Up Boys, 1, 2, 3 Knight Crusaders, and then a nice classic guard battalion. This is the hammer right here.
I will say one of the big we had three of us go out to the event, and like even kind of some of the people I know that I've seen there, because this is multiple years I've been going, like they essentially kind of, it sounds negative to say it, but it's not, but like their meta seems to be roughly like 5 to 6 months past like where we were, as far as like, so like whatever we were doing 6 months ago, where you're seeing knights everywhere, that's kind of what was the case. Like there was a ton of knights. I want to say like half the field had at least a knight in their list. I don't have the exact numbers in front of me or whatever of who that was, but that's the reason you're seeing triple knight. It's the reason you're seeing single knight. They're also running 2.5-hour rounds, which definitely leads to being like a knight favorable matchup. Like you want to be able to get those games done. So that's a good example of like kind of why. But I mean, I'm not saying obviously triple knight is good, with the Crusaders and things like that. He did great.
There's not a whole lot of a breakdown we can do with triple knights other than go, yeah, we know exactly how this shit works.
I'm interested to see that. So you said that. I'm sorry, what was that, Tony?
I said you basically either have an answer or you don't. You either get curbs
to
that one way or another. We're gonna get a beer at earlier than the rest.
Either you're going to make me feel better about the number of violations I just encountered, or I'm going to laugh at you while you're put away your $500 paperweights.
Right. Yeah, exactly. So it's definitely like not like a skew list, but it's like the extremes, it's like, okay, who has the better answer? And that's it. Like, so it definitely leads to getting the game done quicker, which, has its merit.
And coming in at third place, so Mr. Ryan Olson with an Alatok battalion, an Alatok air wing, and a Cabal of the Blackheart spearhead. Triple Ravager with Disintegrator Cannon seems to be a thing. I know you brought that as well. Then, of course, he brought 4 Eldar Flyers, never a bad idea. 1 Skyrunner, 1 Farseer, 1 Warlock, 10 Rangers, some Guardians, and some other crap that nobody cares about.
Yeah, Ravagers are definitely a thing. Like, I wouldn't say it's an auto include, but it's pretty much an auto include in an Eldar list.
Oh yeah,
they're so good.
It's kind of your answer to any kind of heavy armor unit, right?
Like it's just pure efficiency. Like strength 5 -3, 2 damage guns. You got 9 shots per boat for 125 points. Like that's amazing. And then you put him next to an Archon that's letting him reroll ones to hit. He has a relic that lets him reroll ones to wound. So Now, it's just pure efficiency. Yeah. Like, they're really good against the soft targets. They're really good against those mid-range. And then even against knights, like, sure, they're rooting on fives, but, like, you're still going to sneak wounds through, and, like, they do pretty good work.
You're going to get something through.
Yeah.
But, I mean, that's after he goes after you with – he goes after whatever knight it is with the triple Crimson Hunters and the Hemlock.
Yeah, exactly. He's flying the planes around. He's letting the backfield Dacko with the Ravagers, you know, be a thing. And then, like, he's got the little characters floating around doing some smites, doing some Eldar trickery. And then if you have any support characters, you know, some sniper rifles, holding objectives, minus two to hit, things like that. So, pretty good. And yeah. he's a great player, too. Definitely somebody that's always a factor, like, when you go out to that event. Like, for years, he's always been, like, definitely one of the ones like, okay, let's see what he brought, because he's going to be a thing.
Yeah, and what's interesting about this one is he lost his first matchup by like 19 points and then just cruised the rest of the tournament with the exception of round four, where it was a tight...
The good old Alex Gonzalez submarine technique.
Yeah. The Hunt for Red October, he's doing the diving.
50 feet, aye, sir. Chief of the watch, on the 1MC, dive, dive.
I thought I'd never get a chance to use that soundbite from a couple episodes ago, but guess what? It's back.
That's hilarious. Yeah, that soundbite is good.
Anytime I can fit in a Crimson Tide reference, I'm 100% going to make that happen. All right, so we are bumping up right on our one-hour time limit. Let's go ahead and wrap this up. Mr. Myers, thank you very much for joining us for the first time. We look forward to bringing you back anytime you wish. Best of luck with your business into the future, sir.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me. I really appreciate it. Thanks for putting up with me with my tired shenanigans, and hopefully it wasn't too miserable for everybody, but I'm looking forward to doing some more Yanari trickery, see if I can change. I'm going to need to make some edits and changes and try out new lists and keep doing some stuff. And if you guys aren't doing anything on the Father's Day weekend, come on out to Vegas and enjoy it with us doing the Wasteland weekend. We still have some tickets available. I think we're at, I want to say, just under 80 people for the major on 40K. So if you want to be part of that and win some stuff, do some craziness, and enjoy Vegas, we're at the Gold Coast Casino, and we're happy to have you.
Alex and Schwartz, let's go ahead and sign off, boys.
Everyone have a good night.
Have a good night, everyone.
And we are heading out. Please feel free to check our Facebook page for some polls and check out the other episodes. The Age of Sigmar podcast run by Alex and the X-Wing podcast run by me again. God, how'd that happen? Goodbye, everyone.
Winning is not a sometime thing. It's an all-the-time thing. You don't win once in a while, and you don't do things right once in a while. You do them right all the time. Winning is a habit.